Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. So maybe categorification is not such a good word. Since I'm in a physics department, perhaps it should be called quantization, though I've never been quite sure what that means. So this is based on a whole load of, or touches on a whole load of different papers, and it's joint work with just about everybody, but including Oren and Chris and Pavel, who are going to be at this conference, or here already. So I'm going to start with a brief introduction to the PTVV. I guess almost everybody at this conference already knows about it, but just in case you don't. Then we'll talk. I'll talk about our Darboux theorem for shifted symplectic derived schemes and stacks, and then categorification on the level of objects and morphisms, basically meaning that to a minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme or stack, we're going to associate a perverse sheaf, and then to a Lagrangian in minus one shifted symplectic derived schemes or stacks, we're going to associate a morphism of perverse sheaf. Well, so this is proved, and this is work in progress. So let's start off by talking about shifted symplectic geometry. So if we have an algebraically closed field K, characteristic zero, and we work in the Turn and Vezzozzi derived algebraic geometry theory, we then have infinity categories of derived K schemes and derived K stacks, including in particular derived Artin K stacks. So you can think about a derived scheme as being a geometric space, which is covered by the Zariski open sets Y in X, such that Y is equivalent to the spectrum of some commutative differential graded algebra over K in non-positive degrees. We're going to require our derived schemes to be locally finitely presented. So that is, that probably means locally finite type. So these CDGAs are required to be finitely presented, so they only have finitely many generators. That's a strong condition. Derived schemes or stacks have tangent complexes and cotangent complexes. These are perfect complexes of coherent sheaves on X, whose rank is a virtual dimension, an integer. Okay, so in a wonderful paper, Pantev and Mottoni, Bertrand, Michel, and Gabriele defined a version of symplectic geometry in the world of derived algebraic geometry. So if X is a derived scheme or stack, then we have the cotangent complex, Lx, the replacement for the cotangent bundle of a symplectic manifold, let's say. This has exterior powers, which are also complexes, and there's a Durham differential, a morphism of complexes from the complex of P forms to the complex of P plus 1 forms. Now, because we're in the derived world, things which work, which would have been bundles or sheaves in the classical world become complexes. So we also have a second D, an internal differential, which goes from the graded degree K part of the P forms into the graded degree K plus 1 part of the P forms. And these two differentials, D and the Durham D, they commute or anti-commute up to sign, depending upon your conventions. And the way we wrote it, you basically have D plus D Durham all squared as 0. Okay, so then you define a P form of degree K on your derived scheme or derived stack X, the K some integer. This is a cohomology class in the complex of P forms on X. Whereas a closed P form of degree K is an element of this slightly funny complex. You take the P forms and P plus 1 forms and P plus 2 forms and so on forever. So you take the product of all p plus I forms from I is 0 up to infinity, you shift the degree of the p forms, the p plus I forms by I, and then you take d plus the Durham differential as your d on that complex, and then you take a cohomology class of degree k in this great big complex, broadly. So then there's a projection from closed p forms to p forms. So a closed p-form is not necessarily a special example of a p-form. It's a p-form with extra structure. So it takes a closed p-form of degree k to just as the first term in the expansion, which is a p-form of degree k. Okay, so now let's suppose we have a degree k 2 form on our scheme or stack X. Then it induces a morphism from the tangent complex to the cotangent complex with a shift by degree k. And we call our 2 form non-degenerate if this morphism from tangent complex to shifted cotangent complex is a quasi-isomorphism. So that's the analog of the usual notion that a 2 form on a manifold is non-degenerate if it induces an isomorphism from the tangent bundle to the cotangent bundle. Okay, if you have a derived scheme, then the cotangent complex lives in non-positive degrees because it's really built out of the cotangent complexes of CDGAs, which also, by convention, live in non-positive degrees. And the tangent complex is dual to that, so it lives in the complementary degrees, which are from 0 to infinity. So therefore, this map, your two-form map going from the tangent complex to the cotangent complex shifted by k, this can be a quasi-isomorphism if and only if k is non-negative, well, that's both a zero, in which case it doesn't really make any sense. In that case, the cotangent complex is forced to live in degrees k up to zero, and the tangent complex lives in degrees zero up to minus k. So if k equals zero, then the tangent complex lives only in degrees zero, which basically means it's smooth. It's a smooth classical k scheme. If k is minus one, then the cotangent complex of x lives in degrees minus one and zero, which is the usual definition of when a scheme is quasi-smooth. Quasi-smooth drive schemes are nice because they're things for which enumerative geometry works. You can form invariants like Gromov-Witten invariants, Donaldson-Thomas invariants, and so on, by counting quasi-smooth derived schemes. If you have the cotangent complex living in larger degrees, then the whole theory of invariants in geometry generally is unlikely to work quite so well, if at all. Okay, so a closed two-form of degree k on X is called a k-shifted symplectic structure if the associated two-form is non-degenerate. So that's just a kind of fairly obvious generalization of the notion of symplectic form to the drive world. It's a closed non-degenerate two-form. Okay, so Tony and his friends prove that if you have a Calabi-Yau M-fold of your field, and you have a drive moduli scheme or drive moduli stack of coherent sheaves or of complexes of coherent sheaves on Y, then this moduli stack has got a 2 minus m shifted symplectic structure omega. So this suggests applications because there is a lot of interesting geometry concerning Calabi-Yau moduli schemes. For example, Donaldson-Thomas theory for Calabi-Yau threefolds, which is really how I came into the subject. Okay, so a way of seeing why this is sensible is that on a Calabi-Yau m-fold, you have Sayre duality of coherent sheaves. And we'll see how Sayre duality corresponds to this isomorphism between tangent complex and shifted cotangent complex. So at a point E in your moduli space, so E is just some coherent sheaf, the tangent complex, if you take if you restrict to E and take the ith cohomology, you get the I minus oneth x group of E with itself. And the ith cohomology of the cotangent complex at E is the 1 minus ith x group of E with itself dual. So Sayre duality and the Calabi-Yau condition tells you that x to the I of E is isomorphic to x to the m minus I of E dual. So if you put together that statement and these two things, and you note that the shift of m here and two shifts of 1 by 1 here, you see that this corresponds to saying that the I plus 1th cohomology of the tangent complex at E is isomorphic to the I plus 1th cohomology of the cotangent complex shifted by 2 minus m. So that kind of justifies this idea that Calabi-Yau M-fold moduli stacks should have 2 minus M shifted symplectic structures. Okay, so in the Calabi-Yau 2-fold case, such as K3s, you get naught shifted symplectic things. So that corresponds to the probably fairly familiar fact that moduli schemes of sheaves on a K3 surface are classically symplectic. But this is now telling us that Calabi-Yau M-folds for other M also have this derived symplectic structure on them. Okay, now let's suppose we have a K-shifted symplectic derived scheme or derived stack, X and Omega. Then PTVV define a notion of Lagrangian L in shifted symplectic, I think. This is a morphism I going from L into X of derived schemes or derived stacks together. Well, okay, so the natural notion of isotropic for your symplectic structure would be that the pullback of the two form on X back to L should be zero. But because we're in the drive world, these two things won't be equal exactly. Instead, you need to choose a homotopy, a path from there to there in the space of two forms. And this homotopy induces a morphism from the tangent complex to the relative cotangent complex with a shift. And the Lagrangian condition, the isotropic thing should be Lagrangian, is that this should be a quasi-isomorphism of complexes. Okay, now a nice thing about shifted symplectic geometry is it has this kind of inductive flavor, that if you have a K-shifted symplectic object and you have two Lagrangians in it, then you can take their fibre product, L cross over X M, and the fibre product is K minus 1 shifted. So you can go from one level of shifted symplecticness down to the next. Okay, so if you have a classical smooth symplectic screen, symplectic scheme, then it is zero shifted symplectic in the PTVV sense. If you have classical Lagrangians in S, classical smooth Lagrangians, then they're also Lagrangians in the PTVV sense. So somehow classical symplectic geometry embeds into this derived version. But therefore, the derived Lagrangian intersection of L intersect M, as you should think about it as a fiber product, a homotopy fiber product in the infinity category of derived schemes, even though L and S and M are all classical, this is a derived scheme, which is generally not classical, and it's minus one shifted symplectic. So Lagrangian intersections, at least derived Lagrangian intersections, have this nice geometric structure on them. Okay, so now let's talk about our own results. So it's natural to, once you have this new notion of symplectic geometry, it's nice to ask whether the kind of classical theorems of symplectic geometry extend to this new version. And here we'll see an extension of Darboux's theorem. A bit further on, we'll see there's also an extension of the Lagrangian neighborhood theorem, or a kind of extension of that. So what we're saying is that if X and omega is a K-shifted symplectic derived K-scheme, for K now strictly negative, then basically we're saying that Zariski or Eytal locally, we can put this shifted symplectic, this derived scheme and its symplectic structure into a standard form. So the easiest statement is if K is not 2 mod 4, then each closed point little x and big X has a Zariski open neighborhood Y, where Y is equivalent to the spectrum of a commutative differential graded algebra, A. So this is about as nice as it could be, more or less. So it's a very explicit form. It's a CDGA. Okay, this is a slight lie. It's generated by a smooth algebra in degree zero, and then freely generated by finitely many generators of negative degrees over the degree zero part. And so we have variables xj and yjl, where the top index here indicates a degree. So this is basically a kind of, this thing looks like a graded manifold, broadly. And then the symplectic form is equivalent to something which has a two form, and then all of the higher kind of correction terms are zero. And a two form is what you'd expect. It's constant in coordinates. It's just the form sum of dy wedge dx, where these two things have complementary degrees. So the degree of the y variable, the degree of the x variable add up to k. So the way we've written it is that the x variables have degrees in the top half. So they go from minus k over 2 up to 0. And the y variables have degrees in the bottom half, so from minus k up to minus k over 2. Sorry?
If k equals 0,
it's actually false.
The Darboux theorem?
Yes. In the algebraic world...
So in the
infinity world, the Darboux theorem is held. But in the algebraically, you can't locally trivialize, I think, even a tile sense. I mean, you can do it formally. This is something, a case in which somehow in the derived case it's actually easier than in the classical case. And it's kind of because, at least, well, if we're negative degrees, then the it kind of all acts like formal power series. So it's a kind of formal thickening of the classical object. Anyway, okay, so that tells you what the graded algebra looks like, something entirely standard. The symplectic form looks like something entirely standard. There is still some interesting local geometry left, and that's encoded in the differential D on the CDGA. And this differential is given by the Poisson bracket with respect to the inverse of this symplectic form with a Hamiltonian function H in our algebra A of degree k plus 1.
Well, there's no way to put this Hamiltonian symplectic form.
No. Well, but there should not be. Because, you know, these things do have a lot of complexity. This really is as good as you can get, I think. Okay, if k is 2 mod 4, then there's two statements. There's an étale local statement with omega 0 constant in coordinates, and then there's a Zariski local statement in which the middle components have some invertible functions in them. And the reason for that is that basically, in order to kind of standardize things, we'd have to take square roots. And taking square roots is an étale, well, at least in this kind of 2 mod 4 case, and taking square roots is an étale local operation, but it's not Zariski local. Okay, so we also have an extension of this to derived Artin stacks, which has Orem Ben Bassett on as well. Okay, so that's our Darboux theorem. So the way we prove it, is that, okay, well, we start off with our shifted symplectic derived K scheme. So the cotangent complex lives in degrees K up to 0. So we first show, actually just for any derived K scheme with cotangent complex in these degrees, we can build a Zariski open thing around our chosen point, equivalent to spec of A, where A is a CDGA of a K, where the A0 part is a smooth K-algebra, and it's freely generated over A0 by graded variables in degrees minus 1 down to K. Sorry, that should probably be a minus K there. And you can make the dimensions of the smooth K-algebra and the number of generators to be minimal at the point X. So basically, these dimensions, they are dimensions of the cohomology of the cotangent complex at the point X. So this is just a statement about locally finite and presented derived schemes. So then, using some theorems about periodic cyclic cohomology, we show that on spec of this CDGA, you can write, well, you can kill the later terms in the series and just write it as omega 0 and a bunch of zeros, where omega 0 is now a two-form of degree k, which is closed with respect to both differentials. And then the fact that we've chosen this thing to be minimal at the point x forces omega 0 to be strictly degenerate near x. And therefore, you make your open set y a bit smaller. It becomes degenerate completely. So then you're able to change variables to write it in this constant coordinates way. And then finally, you show that D is a symplectic. Well, you can interpret it as a kind of vector field on the graded manifold coming from that. And it has to preserve the symplectic form. And then that kind of integrates to a Hamiltonian H. OK, so that's the Darboux theorem. So I'm particularly interested in this talk in the case k equals minus 1, which corresponds to Clarbia 3 moduli spaces. In that case, well, the Hamiltonian H has degree 0, because the degree is k plus 1. So it's a function in the classical variables, the degree 0 variables only. And the degree minus 1 variables turn out to be just the kind of essentially the cotangent bundle of the smooth scheme you started with. So in this case, we find that if x in the integrate is minus 1 shifted symplectic derived k scheme, then it's risky locally equivalent to a derived critical locus. The critical locus of the Hamiltonian function h on u, u is just spec of a0, of a1, where u is a smooth classical k scheme, affine, in fact, and h from u to a1 is a regular function.
Does this also work for stacks?
For stacks, you can show that, well, the classical Artin stack has an atlas where the atlas is a classical critical locus. It's slightly more complicated as to what happens to the derived variables, but it's still pretty explicit. So yeah, there's a nice answer for stacks. Anyway, so the underlying classical case, so therefore the underlying classical case scheme is riskily locally isomorphic to a classical critical locus, critical locus of some functional case scheme. Okay, so one thing this tells you is that classical Clarbiau threefold moduli schemes are risky locally critical loci of regular functions on smooth schemes. Okay, so this is a kind of something which is slightly unusual in that this is something we did actually want to know. So back when I was pretending to be a classical algebraic geometer, I spent some time proving that Clarbiau threefold moduli schemes over C are critical loci of holomorphic functions on complex manifolds. And I was later somewhat surprised to find that it is actually true algebraically. So usually people that go into derived algebraic geometry, they just stay there. And they prove theorems about derived stacks that nobody else can understand. But this is an example of you know, something actually coming back out again and proving something that we wanted to know. Okay. Sorry.
Do we know that these moduli schemes don't have higher derived structure?
Which ones?
In your two lines at the bottom.
Well, because they're classical. And the classical moduli schemes, they're just a classical truncation of the derived moduli scheme.
The theorem applies. The theorem tells you that the derived moduli scheme has a shifted minus one shifted symplectic structure, and you apply all these theorems.
Yeah.
How do you go back to the truncated version? It's straightforward. I just don't know.
Nothing complicated, and so the classical scheme is a classical truncation of the derived scheme, and therefore it's a classical truncation of the derived critical locus, which is just a classical critical locus. Okay, so now it turns out that there is actually a classical notion, a classical geometric structure, which encodes a classical truncation of a minus one shifted symplectic derived schemes, which I call decritical loci. So if you're a hardcore derived algebraic geometer, you might think this is a terrible thing to do. Some of our referees certainly seem to think that. But I've always found derived algebraic geometry rather hard, so I quite like this approach. So I'm going to define a new geometric structure, which is a kind of classical version of minus one shifted symplectic things. And there's a truncation functor from minus one shifted symplectic derived schemes into these guys. So it starts by saying that if you have any classical K scheme, then there's some kind of natural sheaf you can build on this. And then the additional structure is going to be a section of this natural sheaf. OK, so let's suppose we have a classical K scheme X. Then it turns out that there is a canonical sheaf Sx of k vector spaces on X, such that if you have an open subset R in X and an embedding I from R into a smooth scheme U, which and then if IR U is the ideal of functions on U vanishing on the image of R, then the sheaf SX on R is the kernel of D going from OU on the ideal squared into the cotangent bundle of U divided by the ideal times that. Okay, so, and there's a natural splitting of SX into locally constant functions and well, local constant functions are there, and then kind of trace free functions here. Okay, so this looks slightly weird. Another way which you might feel more happy about doing that is that if you, okay, X is our scheme, then we have, well, a structure sheaf OX, and we have a cotangent complex LX, and there's a Dirac differential. So that's a morphism of complexes, though it's not a morphism of complexes of OX modules, because although these are coherent sheaves or complexes of coherent sheaves, this is not a morphism of coherent sheaves. So you can take the cone on this morphism as a complex of sheaves of just k vector spaces on X, and you can take the minus one-th cohomology sheaf on this guy, and this turns out to be isomorphic to this sheaf Fx. So there is a nice way to write this sheaf in a way which kind of makes sense without taking embeddings into classical schemes. Anyway, so any classical scheme has this funny sheaf Sx.
So the theorem is actually that, what is the statement of the theorem, that this thing is isomorphic to the one that you wrote?
It's true that the sheaf is isomorphic to the one I wrote, although that's not what the theorem says. The theorem just says that there is a sheaf which looks like this on kind of local presentations.
We know that this guy doesn't work for that guy, it applies the theorem, right?
Probably, yeah.
The statement is sheafification of...
No, this is already a sheaf. It doesn't need to be sheafified.
So what's the statement?
Well, the statement is that there is a canonical sheaf Sx, k vector spaces on X. It happens to be...
It does depend on the embedding.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but so okay. Whenever you have an embedding, you have this way of writing this sheaf. So what this really means is that if you can write your scheme X as the critical locus of some function f from u into a1, then let's just take R to be equal to X, I can the inclusion, then f plus the ideal squared is a section of Sx. So my f lies in the kernel of, well, if you take d of f is 0 on x, because x is a place where df equals 0. So also it turns out that f restricted to the reduced scheme is a locally constant function. And if it's 0, then f plus ix u squared is a section of Sx0. Now, f plus the ideal to the first power is just f restricted to x as a function on the scheme x. But what the theorem really says is that, well, it's not just f plus one power of the ideal, but f plus two powers of the ideal makes sense on x intrinsically without reference to any embedding of x into the smooth scheme u. So therefore, if x is a critical locus of a regular function on a smooth scheme U, you can actually remember F up to second order in the ideal generated by DF as a piece of data just on X, not on the scheme U. Okay, so the reason we care about this is, let's suppose you have a scheme X which is written as a critical locus in two different ways. So if X is a critical locus of some function F on U, and it's also the critical locus of some function G on V, then you can say, well, f plus the ideal of x on u squared and g plus the ideal of x on v squared, they're both sections of Sx. So you can ask if they're equal as sections of Sx. And this gives you a way to compare isomorphic critical loci, which are written as critical loci in different smooth classical schemes. Okay. So now we can define a decritical locus or an algebraic decritical locus, X and S. This is a classical K scheme. X together with the global section, little s, in the sections of this sheaf SX0 of X, such that you can cover X by Zariski open subsets R in X, which have an isomorphism to a critical locus of a function on the smooth scheme, which identify the section on your Zariski open set R with the function f plus the ideal squared. Okay. Okay. So a decritical locus, therefore, is a K-scheme X which can Zariski locally be written as a critical locus of a regular function on a smooth scheme, and the section S remembers the function f up to second order in the ideal defined by df.
So D here stands for differential, or. Derived.
Yes, derived. It's a kind of truncated notion of derived. I like single letter abbreviations. Okay, so there's also a complex analytic version of this. Okay, so we're hearing two versions of derived complex analytic geometry in this conference. As far as I know, neither of them has got as far as having a version of PTVV in it. So using these decritical complex analytic version of decritical loci, we're actually able to carry out our program in the complex analytic world as well. Anyway, so another theorem we prove is that if you have a minus one shifted symplectic derived K scheme, then the classical K scheme attached to that extends naturally to an algebraic decritical locus X and S. So also, decritical loci have a good notion of canonical bundle, which is a holomorphic line bundle on the reduced scheme, and the canonical bundle of the decritical locus is isomorphic to the determinant line bundle of the cotangent complex of the derived scheme restricted to the reduced classical scheme. Okay, so that's a truncation functor from minus one shifted symplectic things to these decritical loci. Okay, so now let's move on to talk about perverse sheaves. And the first thing we're going to discuss is how you associate to a minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme a perverse sheaf on that thing. So this is some kind of a quantization. So here's our theorem. It says that if X and omega is a minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme, then, well, just because it's a derived scheme, which is locally a finite type, it has a canonical bundle, det of Lx. This is a line bundle of the classical scheme. Well, I write it as a line bundle of the classical scheme there. So we define an orientation of the minus one shifted symplectic thing to be a choice of square root line bundle for this thing. So orientation, so it really goes back to the work of Konslevich and Zobelman on motivic Donaldson Thomas theory. They found they needed something called orientation data, which is broadly a kind of determinant line, a square root of a determinant line bundle of the obstruction theory. So it's basically what's going on here. So if you have a minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme and an orientation, we can construct a canonical perverse sheaf, B X omega, on the classical scheme X, and basically such that if X and omega is Zariski locally modeled on the critical locus of a function f on U, then the perverse sheaf is locally modeled on the perverse sheaf of vanishing cycles of f and U. Okay, so this works whenever the whole package of perverse sheaves works. So and let's say we're over the complex numbers, then we can work with perverse sheaves over any reasonably nice ring, such as the integers or the rational numbers. It also works in the context of D modules, so we get a regular holonomic D module on X, and of the complex numbers we can do it in mixed Hodge modules. Okay.
Will it have canonical monodromy action?
Sorry?
Will it have canonical monodromy action?
Yes. Yes. And
it's a perverse sheaf with a C.
Yes, it's a perverse sheaf, and so there is a monodromy action. There is a Verdier duality. Basically, all the nice kind of stuff you would hope works does work, I think. Okay, so in fact, we construct the perverse sheaf from the oriented decritical locus. So this construction factors through our truncation functor from minus one shifted symplectic things to decritical loci. And we also define perverse sheaves on oriented complex analytic decritical loci. So for example, upon intersections of two homomorphic Lagrangians in a homomorphic symplectic manifold. Okay, so let's outline how we prove this. So, to a first approximation, we take as risky open cover of X by critical charts, risky open sets Ri, which are written as the critical locus of a regular function Fi on a smooth scheme Ui, T1. So then upon each open set Ri, we have a perverse sheaf of branching cycles PV of Ui Fi. And then we take a double overlap between two such charts, and we show that the perverse sheaves of branching cycles are canonically isomorphic on the double overlap. And then because perverse sheaves glue like sheaves, so that is perverse sheaves form a stack, basically if you have a bunch of perverse sheaves on the open sets and open cover, and you have isomorphisms on double overlaps, and you know that those isomorphisms compose associatively on triple overlaps, then you're done. Just some nice theorem about perverse sheaves tell you that there exists a global perverse sheaf on X, which is isomorphic to your choice on each chart. Actually, things are a bit more complicated. At least atile-locally, let's say, there are isomorphisms between the perverse sheaf branching cycles of UIFI and UJFJ on the overlap R and set RJ, but these are not strictly canonical. They're only canonical up to sign. And so one way of thinking about this is that a kind of typical way of comparing two critical charts is that you have one critical chart, and then the second critical chart is given by, you take a vector bundle over the first critical chart and a non-degenerate quadratic form, and you add the quadratic form to the function. And then to compare those two perverse sheaves of branching cycles, you need to be able to choose an orientation of that quadratic form. Okay, so to make these virtually vanishable canonical, you have to use the square root line bundle of the determinant line bundle to define some kind of natural principle Z2 bundles, QI on RI. And then the thing which is canonical is an isomorphism between the perversely vanishing cycles twisted by these principal Z2 bundles. Okay, so therefore you can, what you glue is the perversely vanishing cycles twisted by principal Z2 bundles to give you a global perverse sheaf of branching cycles.
Do you know in examples where, do you know if you can get actually two non-isomorphic perverse sheaves in this way? I mean, different choices of square root.
Yes, that's easy. Just take a smooth scheme with fundamental group which has interesting maps into Z2, such as just a torus, and then the critical locus of the zero function on that, and then two different square root line bundles would give you two different perverse sheaves.
Oh, okay. So one of them will be just the
They'll be shifted constant sheaves, and then shifted Z2 local systems. Okay. So let's look at the consequence of this in Calabi-Yau threefold situation firstly. So if you have a Calabi-Yau threefold, perhaps I should also have said that the perverse sheaf also works for the R-time stack case. Okay, so if we have a Calabi-Yau threefold over K and a classical moduli scheme, or in fact moduli stack of coherent sheaves, or of complexes of coherent sheaves on Y, then kind of classically or semi-classically we have a symmetric obstruction theory on M. So let's suppose that we're given a square root for the determinant line bundle of this symmetric obstruction theory. So, basically, this is the cotangent complex of the derived moduli scheme restricted to the classical moduli scheme. So this is orientation data in the sense of Konsevich and Soibermann. Then we get a natural perverse sheaf on our classical moduli scheme. So these moduli schemes are what Donaldson-Thomas theory of Calabi-Yau threefolds is built out of. Okay, so we can take the hypercohomology of this. Okay, in the scheme case, at least, in the stack case, things get worse. In the scheme case, we can take the hypercohomology of this perverse sheaf of finite cycles. Provided this modulized scheme is of finite type, this will be a finite dimensional graded vector space over, let's say, the rationals, whatever you built your perverse sheaf over. The pointwise Euler characteristic of your perverse sheaf turns out to be what's called the Behrend function, nu m of your modulized scheme m. This is a constructible function with values in the integers on m, which is important in Nonsen Thomas theory. So therefore, just by some fact about constructible sheaves, the graded dimension of the hypercohomology of this perverse sheaf is the Euler characteristic of your scheme, again we suppose it's finite type, weighted by this constructible function. Now, Kai Behrend proved that the Donaldson Thomas invariant of M, provided M is now proper, is just this weighted Euler characteristic. So therefore, the hypercohomology of this perverse sheaf on M is a graded vector space whose dimension is the Donaldson Thomas invariant of your modulized space M. So it's a categorification of this Donaldson Thomas invariant of this modulized space. And so, in fact, Kai Behrend kind of conjectured this might be possible back in 2005. So we've now basically come up with a proof that these perverse sheaves exist.
Does this Behrend function just depend on M as a scheme?
Yes.
But this perverse sheaf depends on M as a critical locus? Or?
That's right. Yeah. Yes, it does. And it depends upon the orientation. But the orientation involves changing orientation means you tensor by a principal Z2 bundle. That doesn't change the Euler characteristic. It doesn't change the local stalks. And it's not clear that Behrend functions really mean anything for schemes which aren't Donaldson Thomas moduli spaces. I mean, they can be defined for any likely finite type scheme, but I'm not sure that they have any significance when things aren't actually critical loci. Okay. So one area of applications is Donaldson Thomas theory of Calabi-Yau threefolds. Another area of applications is Lagrangians in kind of classical symplectic things. So let's suppose S and omega is a classical smooth symplectic K scheme, dimension 2n. And L and M, sitting inside S, are smooth algebraic Lagrangians. And we choose what you could call orientations, so square roots of their canonical bundles. So then you get a natural perverse sheaf P, L, M on the Lagrangian intersection. So we also prove a complex analytic version of this for complex Lagrangians and holomorphic symplectic manifolds using complex analytic decritical loci.
Do you actually need to choose square root of each KL and KM, or do you need maybe something?
No, you just need a square root of the tensor product of these two things on the intersection only. But I like these because I can think about L and the choice of square root as an object in a Foucault type category, which is why I'm doing it this way. Okay, so this is related to a bunch of stuff. So things by Kashiwara and Shapira about DQ modules. People here probably know more about that than I do. And they produce these kind of categories of modules on a symplectic manifold which are supported on Lagrangians. And if you do some kind of internal HOM of these objects, you end up with a perverse sheaf on the Lagrangian intersection, or perverse sheaf with values in C twisted by the Planck constant. And you know, that looks very much like this. Shapira wrote some kind of rather short paper claiming that they were basically isomorphic. There's a paper by Behrend and Fantecci in 2009, which has Batalin and Vilkovisky in the title and has quite a lot of errors in it, in fact, but is clearly trying to go in the same direction as this somehow. Okay, so we think about the hypercohomology of our perverse sheaf as being morally related to the Lagrangian Fleur cohomology, HF star of L and M, the hypercohomology should be identified with the Lagrangian flow cohomology with a shift by n, which is half the dimension of the, well, the dimension of the Lagrangians. And our aim is to define some kind of Foucault categories for algebraic Lagrangians or for complex symplectic manifolds using these ideas. So it's not defined in this generality, in that, okay, if your field is not the complex numbers, then there's no Lagrangian flow cohomology. And even if it is the complex numbers, then we don't require our Lagrangians to be compact or even closed. Okay, but well, you'll see later that we're trying to go in this direction. Okay, so the...
Can you also do it for non-embedded Lagrangians, like for something...
Yes, well, and the right notion is a kind of PTVV notion of derived Lagrangian. So PTVV's derived Lagrangians make sense even when the target is classical. So a kind of extreme example will be that if your target symplectic, zero symplectic thing is a point, then a derived Lagrangian in that is a minus one shifted symplectic scheme. So this notion of derived scheme, in fact, it fails to be immersed exactly when it fails to be smooth. So it becomes, so if they're not embedded or if they're not immersed, then they're also not, they're also kind of singular and non-classical. Okay, so, so the rest of the talk is kind of more speculative. Well, I'm going to explain a conjecture we have about associating morphisms of Hershey's to Lagrangians in minus one shifted symplectic, for which we have at least a kind of detailed outline of proof. Okay, so we've seen that an oriented minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme or stack carries perverse sheaves. So I also expect that proper and oriented Lagrangians I from LN to X should be associated to an element of the hypercohomology H star of this perverse sheaf with so these hypercohomology elements mu L should have a bunch of interesting properties, and you could interpret them as morphisms in some kind of categorification of minus one shifted symplectic geometry, or if you like, interpret them as quantizations of the Lagrangians. Okay, so let's first of all define what we mean by an orientation of a Lagrangian. So let's take X and omega to be a minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme, and I going from LN to X to be a Lagrangian. So our notion of orientation of a Lagrangian is relative to an orientation of the target X. So let's choose an orientation, a square root of the determinant line bundle of the cotangent complex of X on X and omega. So that was what we needed to build up a verse sheaf in the first place. So it turns out that the Lagrangian structure induces a natural isomorphism from the structure sheaf on L into the pullback of the determinant of Lx. I mean, that's because you have TL is quasi-isomorphic to L of L over X minus 1. And you take determinants of both sides. This gives you a det of TL is isomorphic to a det of Lx to the minus 1 tensored with a det, that was probably there, and a det of LL to the minus 1. And somehow these cancel because they're dual. And you end up with the structure sheaf is isomorphic to the pullback of the, you end up with this. Okay, so then we define an orientation for L to be an isomorphism beta from the structure sheaf of L to the pullback of our chosen square root of the determinant line bundle X, which squares to this canonical choice. So it's a square root of a natural isomorphism. If you have a k-shifted symplectic derived scheme for k strictly less than zero, actually what I'm going to say applies to some extent when k equals zero as well, then the first, the Darboux theorem I told you about, shows you that X and omega can be put in an explicit local Darboux form. You can write it as a spec of some CDGA A and an explicit symplectic form on a spec of A. So Pavel Safronov and myself, Pavel's here somewhere, prove a Lagrangian neighborhood theorem, which tell you that, well, if you choose a Darboux form, local form for X, then you can also choose a very explicit local form for L and for I and for the homotopy H going from I star Rho omega to zero. So I'm not going to write it out because we're getting short of time. I'm just going to give you a consequence of this Lagrangian neighborhood theorem in the case of k equals minus 1. So when k equals minus 1, it says that, well, x and omega is minus 1 shifted symplectic dryer scheme, and I from L into x is a Lagrangian in that. And we choose points y and l and image little x and big x. So the Darboux theorem tells us that x and omega is equivalent near the target point x to the critical locus of a regular function on a smooth scheme u. So then it turns out that you can express the Lagrangian L, I, and homotopy H near our chosen point Y in terms of an explicit local model which depends upon a smooth affine scheme V, a trivial vector bundle E over V, so these are basically some extra degree minus one variables, a non-degenerate quadratic form Q on E, a section S of our vector bundle E, and a smooth morphism, so a kind of holomorphic submersion, phi, going from V into U, satisfying the equation that Q of S, S is a pullback of our regular function H. And the classical scheme of L is just the zeros of our the section S of V sitting inside V, it's risky locally. Okay, so our formula for L, it's built very explicitly in coordinates, but if you forget about what the coordinates are saying and just look at what somehow the differential geometry is saying, then this is what you get. Okay, so now I can state a conjecture. If x and omega is an oriented minus one shifted symplectic derived scheme, or a k-stack, and I from L to x is an oriented Lagrangian, then we expect that there should be a natural morphism in the derived category of constructible sheaves on L, going from the constant sheaf on L over whatever your base ring is, let's say the rationals, shifted by the virtual dimension of L, which is an integer, mapping into the shriek pullback of the perverse sheaf. And we can tell you what the local models are with respect to these Darboux form presentations for X and omega and L in theorem 4. So therefore, if L were covered by a single chart in which of this form here, if L was covered by a single chart, then we would know what mu L was. Okay, so Lino Amarin and myself have an outline proof of this conjecture in the scheme case over the field C, and also over a complex analytic version of the same thing. Actually, this is just the first and the simplest in a series of conjectures which you ought to write in terms of infinity categories, which concern higher coherences of these morphisms, mu L, under the various things you might want to do them in, and you might want to take products of symplectic schemes and Lagrangians. You might want to take compositions of Lagrangian correspondences and so on. There's a whole bunch of different operations you can perform here, and you'd want these things to have appropriate higher coherences under those operations. And the methods which we have this outline proof of this conjecture for ought also to allow us to prove the kind of further statements in that series. So there's a...
Yeah. When you say Lagrangian correspondences, you think about X itself being a product of two others.
Yes. Yeah. So if this were the product of two shifted symplectic things, then the Lagrangian correspondence would just be Lagrangian in that. And so basically, in that case, that this perverse sheaf would be the kind of exterior tensor product of two perverse sheaves. Actually, you can think about one of the perverse sheaves is Verger dual to itself. So if you have a Lagrangian correspondence, so if this map were proper, this would give you just a hypercohomology class in the hypercohomology of that thing. If it were a Lagrangian correspondence, it would give you a morphism from one hypercohomology group into the next.
So this, is it something obvious locally, or is it even locally not
clear what it is? Yes. Well, it's maybe not obvious, but I'm saying we have a local, and with respect to this data, we have a local model.
Okay. Oh, see, in this model.
Yeah, in this model, you know, it's what. Okay, so the reverse sheaf is the vanishing cycles functor applied to something, and the morphism is the vanishing cycles functor applied to some other morphism. Yeah, so that we have explicit local models. So the problem is to glue together these explicit local models. Okay, so some consequences of this conjecture. Firstly, cohomological Hall algebras. If you have a club, you have threefold, and you look at the modulized stack of coherent sheaves on Y. This is minus one shifted symplectic. Let's think about the derived stack of short exact sequences in coherent sheaves. It has three different projections from the exact sequences to the modulized stack of objects. So, well, I'm attributing this to Oren Ben-Bassett, but Chris Brav now tells me that he and Toby Dickerhoff have a proof which is more sorted out than Oren's. So, Ben-Bassett, Brav, Dickerhoff can show that if you look at the product of the three projections from exact sequences into three copies of the moduli stack, and you change the sign of the symplectic form in the middle one, this is a Lagrangian morphism. Okay, so then orientation data for Calabi threefold Y basically amounts to an orientation for M and omega and a compatibility. So this is now really in the sense of Konsevich-Sloverman. So then a compatibility condition on this orientation for exact sequences, which is basically equivalent to having an orientation on this Lagrangian morphism. So therefore, as in the theorem 3, you get a perverse sheaf on the moduli stack M with hypercohomology as some greater vector space. And then the conjecture, if you had a Kostaki version of that, and there your ideality, it ought to give you an associative multiplication on this hypercohomology group, make it into a cohomological Hall algebra. As in the Konsevich-Sloverman paper on cohomological Hall algebras, which just does this for the Calabi R3 quiver case. There's a slight amount of doubt there because I haven't worked this through in detail, but I suspect there may be some issue about properness of a certain morphism. But anyway.
So what about the disorientation issues here?
I don't know how to solve them.
So there should be some choice involved. Right?
Yes. Yeah, and it's not known that orientation data exists satisfying the conditions you want, I think. And so I was at a conference with Konsevich in which he was going around saying that if orientation data doesn't exist, then string theory is dead. And so I was busy trying to kill off string theory, but I couldn't do it. So existence of orientation data is a kind of open problem in the various chunks of extensions of Donaldson Thomas theory, not just this. Okay, a second consequence would be being able to define Foucault categories of algebraic symplectic manifolds or complex symplectic manifolds. So if you have an algebraic or a complex symplectic manifold and algebraic or complex Lagrangians in here, which don't have to be compact or closed, and you choose square roots of the canonical bundles, then you get the Lagrangian section. This is oriented minus one shifted symplectic or a decritical locus. It has a perverse sheaf. We should think about the shifted hypercohomology of this perverse sheaf as a substitute for the Lagrangian fluid cohomology. But in the consymplectic geometry story, the Lagrangian fluid cohomology is the morphisms in the derived category of the symplectic manifold and symplectic geometry. Now, if we have three Lagrangians, then you have three double intersections, which are all minus one shifted symplectic. The triple intersection is Lagrangian in the product of the three. By Oren Ben-Bassett. So then if we imply our conjecture to this triple intersection, and then we rearrange things a bit using the Verdier duality to swap one of these perverse sheaves with its Verdier dual, you'll find that you get a morphism from some of the tensor product of the LM and MN perverse sheaves with a shift by M into the LM perverse sheaf. Then if you see what this does on hypercohomology, this gives you a multiplication map, if we replace the hypercohomology by Lagrangian Fleur groups, this gives you the multiplication map, which is composition of morphisms in the derived Foucault category. And then the higher coherences for the morphisms, mu LMN, under composition ought to give you the infinity structure you need to define some derived Fourier category, which is what we hope to do. Okay, so perhaps I should bail out at this point. So as I said, we have a kind of a detailed outline of this proof. I know, but I was stuck on this conjecture for nearly 3 years. Now I think I know what to do, but it will take probably the next 3 years to write it up. So don't hold your breath. Anyway, thank you for listening.